It's the CougarFan.com Rising Shout Podcast, episode 248. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this week's show, Matt and I diagnose the BYU offense. What are the biggest problems and what are the solutions? And Matt and I don't always agree this week on what those solutions could be. We also preview West Virginia and answer a boatload of your tweetbag questions. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, what's going on?
Hey, welcome to the show, everybody. It's really good to be here. I'm excited about it.
It is good. You know, nothing beats. Seriously? That is such a tired trick.
Continue? You were saying something?
Matt, what is better than talking about another close BYU loss? I mean, it's fun.
It's better than a blowout, is it or is it not?
I would say yes.
So you take a close loss over a blowout?
Yeah, because like at the close loss, like I don't know if you saw any of Kalani Sitake's his press conference today, but he did say, you know, hey, we've lost, you know, two close games to two good teams. You know, if you got blown out by three touchdowns to UCLA, I don't know that you feel quite as good.
Yeah, that's probably true. I guess that's fair.
So before we jump into that, Matt, we're going to jump into our first tweet bag question of the day.
Tweet bag.
It's been a while since we have started it on some geeky, nerdy type of question, but we're going to do that tonight. Courtesy of Ryan Sorensen on Facebook. That's Sorensen with an S-O-N. No, that's he's on Twitter, sorry. At RJ Sorensen on Twitter. He says, off football topic. And by the way, we're going to hear from Ryan again. Okay.
Wow, Ryan's really,
he's bringing
digging deep.
He brought the game today. He said, thoughts on the new Doctor Strange movie? Hashtag, please talk about something other than UCLA loss. Hashtag, nerds rule. Matt, have you seen the trailers for the new Marvel's Doctor Strange movie with Benedict Cumberbatch?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
Whose name happens to be part of our warm-up ritual.
Yes, it is. You hit all of the consonant sounds and vowels. I mean, you hit it all.
Yeah, you pretty much... Listen, Cumberbatch brings it all. I'm not sure how much traction we're going to get with the please talk about something other than UCLA loss hashtag. I didn't check to see if it was trending at all in the area.
I'll check while you're talking.
So I think I've seen it. I think I've seen a trailer for this. This isn't one that's really jumped out at me. I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh my gosh, you're pathetic.
It took me a minute actually when I read this tweet to remember if this is the one where like the guy travels through different dimensions of time or whatever it is with the TARDIS. What's that one called?
Oh my gosh, that's Doctor Who, you idiot.
Yes, that's the one, Doctor Who. Well, they're all doctors. So
You're embarrassing your nerd brother.
No, I don't.
Your geeky brother is now embarrassed by you.
It took me a minute to figure out.
You know
how
used to embarrass you with my geekiness? It has been reversed.
Well, good. Embarrass you in front of your friends.
So, Matt, it looks fantastic. I was never a big Doctor Strange fan growing up reading the comics, but I have to say, good star power. The ad looks fantastic. I will say. I will say though, him with an American accent is a little weird.
Yeah, that's gonna weird me out.
I mean, he's doing, I'm sure, a fine American accent, but it's just a little weird. Now, you know, maybe that's not a big deal. So Matt, let's jump into some other stuff.
All right, what do you got? What else do we have?
Let's see.
What else other than the UCLA loss? Let's stick with Ryan's hashtag here.
Well, before we get to volleyball and soccer, which we'll talk to in a minute, Matt, I have a mea culpa.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know what this is. I'll let you go ahead.
So,
I own a piece of this too.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You're supposed to call me out on stuff like this, and you did not.
Nope, I was ill prepared to do so last week.
So last week I said that Kyle Van Noy had like the best week ever. Right? He had like double-digit tackles, a sack, all this other stuff. That was not correct. He had, though he did play in the game, he had no stats in that game.
No stats.
In my hurry for getting the agenda together, I transposed the wrong stats for him. So we got kind of called out a little bit, rightfully so, for absolutely butchering the fact that Kyle Van Noy did not have a career breakout game in week one for the Detroit Tigers.
And normally I would go through the agenda and I read up on these kinds of things. I failed to do so. It was a little bit of the perfect storm there.
Yes, yes. So we messed that up. And then I had it in my notes, but we never said it, that Bronson Kafusi hurt his ankle, broke it, I believe, and is out for the year. So it was in my notes, but we just said, you know, that he didn't play. That wasn't really a mistake. It was just I didn't say what I wanted to say.
See, we were doing well, I think, with the mea culpa there, but now that just kind of sounds like a cop out.
It is. It's not a cop out. We didn't say the words that he was out for the season.
Okay.
We didn't say those words.
No, we did not.
I copped that, but. Or is that what a cop-out means?
I'm not sure.
Oh. All right, so let's do women's... No, let's stick with the NFL. Okay, so our Cougars in the Pros update. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, Goodell!
So, former Cougs in the NFL this weekend. Detroit, unfortunately. Kyle Van Noy was in a bunch of snaps, had a tackle... Not a career game.
Again, not 10 tackles.
Not 10 tackles. The bad news, of course, is about Ziggy Ansah. He went down early in the game with an ankle injury. We were recording this on Monday night. There is no update as of yet. He did not return in that game in a loss to the Tennessee Titans. So don't know what that means for week three. I've seen a replay of it. It doesn't look like nasty or anything, but I don't have an update on that. Matt on the Ravens.
That's better than making one up.
I saved the good news. Let's save the good news for the last. Daniel Sorensen also had a nice game. 3 tackles in for a lot of snaps. He is a part of their defensive rotation at this point and playing special teams as well. So I think if any of their other defensive backs or safeties go down with injury this year, he's going to get some playing time. And he's already getting playing time, which is great. So. He was, I think, one of the best safeties to ever play at BYU. Fantastic athlete. Matt, for the Ravens, it is the return of Dennis Pitta.
Isn't it great?
Last week, week one, he had 3 catches for 39 yards of good
39
week.
39 years.
For
that's
39 years.
That's a
lot of distance. He had 9 catches for 102 yards in a victory versus the rival Cleveland Browns. That's a good week.
That is a good week.
He won some fantasy leagues for folks.
Oh yeah, I was going to say if he's available, you might want to pick him up.
Paul Lasique plays tonight as we are speaking, so no update on him. But we'll be back next week on a Tuesday night where we'll have the full NFL weekend to talk about. Matt, on a scale of 0 to 10, how depressed were you when you heard that Jimmy Garoppolo is hurt?
Yeah, that was really unfortunate.
He guides 3 touchdown drives and basically looks like the second coming of Tom Brady, and then gets hurt, and the Patriots almost lost. They got an interception in the end zone with 2 seconds left to not give up a terrible, terrible loss to the.
Yeah, what did they do? They went and got some guy out of the stands to play quarterback. I mean. At this point, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, they're going to be, I'm sure, tough. Signing somebody else this week to... And again, Monday nights, and it's the Patriots. You won't know
if
Garoppolo
is
starting.
The Patriots aren't going to sign anybody this week. They got a Thursday night game.
Oh, they'll sign somebody. You got to have somebody else.
It's Monday.
I know, but you got to have somebody else. If this guy gets hurt, who plays?
What, do you
put Edelman back in? Come on.
Sure.
Oh, gosh. Actually, he'd probably be pretty good. So, Matt... volleyball, we'll go to women's volleyball now, had a rough weekend. They lost a 5-setter to Utah. And then rebounded nicely, six straight sets against, what did we say that CSUN stood for? California State?
University Northridge.
University Northridge, okay. They beat them 3-0 sets and UNLV, but unfortunately that loss against an unranked Utah team dropped them to 19th in the country. They have coming up this weekend Santa Clara and San Francisco as they begin their conference play. I still feel pretty good about them. That's a tough loss to Utah, but not gonna destroy their season by any stretch of the imagination. Matt, the big news for women's soccer is they are ranked number 2 in the first. They wait to do this. The first NCAA rating percentage index. It is a tool that measures the strengths of the schedule and how they perform against it. And they are 2-0 against ranked teams, having beat both Penn State and Ohio State on the road, by the way. They were number 6 in the polls, or 5, depending on where you're looking. But they're right now, the computers are saying, the second best team in the country. That's pretty awesome. And they are playing, of course, very, very well. This past week, they were able to beat Utah State up in Logan. They've got coming up this weekend a pair of games at home at Southfield, Denver on Thursday night, and Long Beach State starting their that's not a conference game, Long Beach State isn't, but they'll be starting the conference schedule next week. All right, Matt, shall we now move into, what else did we have up here? I think that's it for Cougars. I didn't even say Cougars in the News. By the way, that last segment is called the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. I am in poor form tonight.
Yeah, I don't know what your deal is.
I need more Dr. Pepper.
That's probably the problem.
There we go.
Take care of that?
There we go. I'm feeling it now. I'm feeling it. All right. So, Matt, let's talk about what Ryan Sorensen did not want us to talk about, which is UCLA. We're not going to spend a lot of time on here, but Andre Hutchins, who's now basically the guy on Facebook, okay, four-time facebagger. I think he now is the Sweeney of Facebook.
Yeah, we've got to come up with a sound effect for him.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah, you have to come up with it.
Not me. I don't do the sound effects. That's your job. I do the witty humor, right?
Isn't that witty humor?
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Isn't that what I do? So he says he was at the game on Saturday. He says this. So Matt, it has started a little bit of a flame war on our Facebook page with him and Brian Taylor, but. He says, I know fans spend a lot of money on BYU tickets, gear, merchandise, donations, et cetera, et cetera. Are we ever justified as a fan to boo? Rhetorical question, because he says the answer is no. Specifically referring to college athletics, I know friends are frustrated, but booing equals negativity, and negativity never helps. Rant over. Hashtag go Cougs. Hashtag rep the Y. Hashtag back the coaches.
Lots of hashtags.
His hashtag game was on. Now Kalani Sitake
hashtags on hashtags
addressed that. Okay, in his press conference today, this is what Kalani Sitake Andre, what he had to say. My job isn't to tell the fans what to do. He said it to the Deseret News. That's why they're called fans, and they can voice their opinions however they want. He later on goes on to say, our players appreciate our fans. I appreciate our fans. We know they are a great amount of loyal fans. We've seen it. Isn't that a dig? Right there? And we know there are a great amount of loyal fans. We've seen it. Isn't that a dig? Isn't he digging at the fans booing? Or am I reading too much?
I think you're reading too much.
I think what he's trying to say is,
you know, maybe some fans booed, but we'll give them something to cheer about. You know, that was part of his thing, right? But I think he was trying to focus on the positive. We've got a lot of loyal fans. We've seen them come out. We feel good about the fan situation. I think that was kind of the message.
Yes.
I don't think he was trying to do. I just don't know that he was really going after a not so subtle dig at the boo birds.
So Matt, to answer Andre's question, is it ever justified to boo?
Is it ever justified to boo? Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't deal well in absolutes.
Oh, look at you, so, Mr. Philosophical.
Are there situations out there where fans should feel justified in booing? Yeah.
Are you going to break out like Immanuel Kant for us or something? Are you?
No.
Going to give us a moral imperative of some kind?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Okay. But I am going to say, I don't know that I've seen anything worth booing yet.
So
we've lost a couple of very close games.
Two good teams, by the way.
That's right.
Top 30 teams.
And you know, we'll get more into this, but or maybe I don't know. But we're still installing an offense. We got a brand new staff. And we got a quarterback coming back from a year off.
You're getting ahead of yourself there, buddy. So what you're saying is, don't boo. You haven't seen anything worthy of booing.
I haven't seen anything worthy of booing at this point.
Here's what I have to say about booing. It's stupid, okay? I will do absolutes. I don't like booing your own team. I just don't. I think it's dumb. It's totally demotivating to the people on the field. The other part is, I think fans often boo in the wrong situations.
Yes, this is definitely true.
And I think that just shows, quite frankly, a lot of times when I've been live at BYU games, I'm a little bit ashamed of the fans. Now, this isn't really a knock on BYU fans. Really, this is just a knock on fans, okay?
Especially college sports fans, because you go to a school, you want to cheer for your school's team, and you may go and do that whether you know anything or much about the sport or not.
Right, right. So I'm going to take a nod, and I know, having read our survey questions, a lot of you hate baseball, and for that you should repent. But we're not going to talk about baseball today as far as like details, but I just want to go back in the old DeLorean a few years, and I think it was 4 years ago, David Ortiz had a very rough start to the season. He was hitting under 200, was striking out literally almost every other at bat, okay? At Fenway Park, he got booed. He got booed. Two-time at the time, a two-time World Series champion, one of the best Red Sox ever, and he got booed. Okay? I don't like booing. It makes you look like a bunch of spoiled brats. Okay? Now, there are exceptions. If one of my players or the players that I root for does a really like cheap hit type of thing, like something way out of line, I'm okay with that. I also think if, you know, I can understand it at the end of a long season or in the middle of a long season where you're getting just hammered every game. Like, I'm not sure it's okay, but I get that. Like, I can get why, as a Purdue football fan, there were fans booing midway through last season, right? It's still not very motivating, right? I'm with Andre. The negativity, now, the fans, to Satake's point and Brian's on Facebook as well, they can do whatever they want. They paid for the ticket. If they want to boo, that's their right. I may not like it, but I don't, you know, nobody should be like, Kalani should not have come out and said, don't boo us, right?
Right. I mean, I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying.
Yes.
Is, you know, does it make them bad fans? Well, maybe I don't want to answer that question, right?
I don't think it makes them bad fans necessarily. I just don't. I don't like it. I don't think it's helpful.
And I don't know if it's just a BYU thing, and because you got to think about, you know, other instances where you've seen teams boo their own players. But I feel like that we're just too quick to the boos on this one.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
You know what I mean? I know that there's probably a time where it's okay to boo your own team, right? And I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but I don't think this is it.
Yeah, we're not there. We're not there. You lost by a total of 4 points to two really good teams. Yeah. So, Matt, on the positivity side, Butch Paul is basically awesome.
Yeah, he is the man.
Matt, you said we did our Facebook Live halftime show, so check that out. This week we won't be doing a halftime show. Somewhere, wherever we're eating lunch before the game, we're going to do a little Facebook Live, both of us, pregame show. So check, look for that at Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. So, Matt, you said in the comments, as I was doing my halftime, that Butch may be your new favorite linebacker of all time. Would you like to adjust that statement, or is that still true, or was that just exuberance in the moment?
How many tackles did he have last weekend?
Like 1,000.
Okay, I think he had 19, right?
19, yes.
So
tied a modern record for a BYU player.
And who's the other holder of that record?
Was it Shea Merrick? I didn't even see the name.
I meant to look it up and find out for sure who it was. I'm not sure that it was. But here's my point. This guy is, I believe he's going to have a season for the ages. 19 tackles, 2.5 tackles for a loss, 9 solo tackles. Okay?
9 solo tackles.
I mean, how many offensive plays did UCLA run?
Offensive plays? They ran... Yeah. I've got that right here in front of me.
I see, and I thought you might. I don't have it right here, but
I have all the stats.
Might.
Yeah, they ran 74 total plays on Saturday night.
74 total plays.
On offense. And he had a tackle in 19
of them. 19 of those 74 plays. What's the percentage on that? Resulted in Butch Powell tackling someone.
Yes. That's amazing.
That's insane.
It's amazing.
That's insane. Yeah, what I love about it, there's two things I've seen the past couple weeks that I love about it. The harder the hit, the bigger he smiles when he gets up.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it?
Did you see his neck at the end of the UCLA game?
So, yes.
Huge gash in his neck and in his forehead. He didn't care.
So we were watching the game with some friends, and my friend Cameron's wife, Kara, instantly took a disliking to number 12 on UCLA when he started shushing the crowd the first time he made a good play.
Hey, which is just as lame as booing your own team.
Yes, it is. But here's the thing. She kept pointing out that when he does those hits, he then helps the dude up.
Yeah.
Like, he just seems like this happy guy that's out there taking heads off, and it's just like, this is fun. Like, I think the Shea Mirbrook comparisons are valid for a few reasons. Number one, they've got a similar nose for the ball, which I don't really like that phrase, but in most cases, I think it just means, you're in the right position. But, I mean, this guy comes up, and he hits hard, and he finds the hole, and he gets the guy, right? The other part is they're both undersized, right? They're both small for their position. Mirbrook was small. Butch isn't quite as small as Mirbrook. We'd have to look that up. But I'm just saying, this guy, like, I didn't think there'd be somebody with 100 tackles this year, 85 tackles.
He's going to have 100 tackles.
That's easy. And quite frankly, he is what I thought Lange or Warner might become. And I'm not saying that Warner and Lange aren't having good years, because Warner is having a good year. But right now, the two defensive players to talk about aren't Warner and Lange, are they?
No.
Isn't it got to be, if you're talking about the interior of that defense, it's a newcomer in Pau or a converted running back.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, through three games, those two guys, and then, of course, Nacua, and I think Michael Davis, though he got picked on a little bit against UCLA, is still having a very good season. I mean, those are the four guys that you're like, wow, you know, those guys are playing up and above the average. So it's pretty cool.
So I've gone just looking at a couple of stats here on CougarStats.com.
Yes.
So all time tackles in a game, the leader, this is insane. This almost shouldn't count, is Dan Hansen, with 36 tackles against New Mexico in 1971.
Okay.
That's just insane, right?
Yes, that is crazy.
But if you go since 2000, the other player with 19 was Uwani Unga versus Notre Dame in 2013.
I've heard of him.
And solo tackles in a game, 10 is the high. So Butch was one off of the high, and that's a three-way tie between Andrew Rich, Cameron Jensen, and Paul Wackenhorst. So when you look at this guy who's kind of come out of nowhere, right?
Yes.
And I think people were even a little bit nervous when he was listed where he was in the on the depth chart at the beginning of the season. Well, who is this guy, right? Look at what he's already done three games in, where he has put himself in the history of the position at BYU. And part of what I really made me love Shea Mirbrook, and I still love Shea Mirbrook.
Yes, you do.
And I still you know, we had three boys, and I tried all three times
to name one Shay.
Yeah, I wanted to. It never worked. But
Jen.
But
disappointed.
It's the attitude, it's the approach, and it's just and the nastiness.
Yeah,
we haven't had somebody who hits like
nasty friendliness.
But
the nasty friendliness, like the guy's not like he's not a jerk. Like he hits these guys, and then he's like, "Hey, dude, can I help you up?" You know, it's awesome.
It is pretty awesome. He is a lot of fun to watch.
Yes, if such a thing were legal by NCAA rules, I'd love to buy a jersey of his.
That you can't do that.
I unfortunately cannot do that.
Stupid according to NCAA rules, only they are allowed to make money off of his likeness.
That's right. That's right.
That's not exactly how the rule is written, but
it's pretty much you nailed it. You nailed it. So Matt Todd Ebert on Facebook, obviously he's also someone that asks us questions on Twitter. Todd says highlight of the season so far for him it's the linebackers, athletic interceptions, forced fumbles, and tackling machines. Matt, pick your highlight.
Butch.
Butch is your highlight.
Yes.
My highlight is Francis Bernard. I'm just going to – Butch would also be my highlight. But since we don't – I mean, Bernard, that interception after Nacua's ejection, like this is going to sound like more of a dig than it is. I don't know if there are many players on our offense who could make that catch.
It's a pretty good catch.
It was a phenomenal – like he played the ball so well. You know, and again, I am so glad they took my suggestion to switch him to linebacker.
Yeah, right.
This is like, do you have one of those for your toddlers or babies have a kid chair for eating that's connects to a real chair?
Yes, I have one right over there in the other room.
Okay, so do we. So do we. My wife came home with it, and I was like, that is like the dumbest thing ever. We should get a high chair. So we tried an actual high chair.
You're such a rookie.
Which is terrible. This was 10 years ago, you know, with my first kid. And then we do this other one, and it's just, like, awesome, right? And I do the same thing to my wife all the time. Like, I'm so glad that I talked you out of a high chair and getting one of those. So anyway, good job, coaches.
Do you know what is another highlight for me?
What's that?
How rarely we hear anybody talk about Michael Davis. Except for when he downs punts on the two.
Yeah. It is Michael Davis had a couple of rough plays against UCLA, a couple of bad mm-hmm. plays.
Yep.
It's been 2 years in a row where we almost never hear his name, ever. People don't even throw on his side. And what frustrates me to no end is the only announcers, including our own, who ever say anything about it was Gus Johnson last week. I mean, I just sit there and go, guys, if you're not calling a DB's name a time when they throw 45 times, that's like a good thing, right?
Yeah, somebody ought to point that out, right?
And Gus Johnson did last week, which, gosh, could we have him and whoever that other guy was with him call
was
the rest of the
awesome.
Games? They were so good.
That was awesome.
And these guys this last week
okay,
were
now
terrible.
You can have – would you take this scenario? You can have Gus Johnson every week.
Okay.
But he has to bring
Dan Dierdorf,
Brady Quinn with him every time.
Oh, I think I'd rather have silence. I'm sorry, Gus. Brady's
wow.
so bad.
So
he's
Brady
so
is worse
bad.
Than Gus Johnson is good?
No, that's probably not true. Okay, I'll take it.
Because
Gus is awesome.
He is pretty awesome. I think his awesomeness overcomes Brady Quinn's weirdness.
He is awesome.
It's not even bad. It's
just
a little odd.
And like I just feel like when we were watching that game, this is my wife who's not a huge football fan, but obviously being married to me watches more than she would on her own. She
probably
just said something like, "This is I hadn't even said anything yet," and he said something, and she goes, "Does that guy even watch football?"
Ooh.
And I'm like, but the thing is,
I like it.
I'm not sure he does or enough of it. Because you knew those two, Gus, and I'm sorry I'm forgetting the other guy's name, they were so prepared for that game. Like, they knew stuff about BYU and Utah players that I think even fans of the teams don't necessarily know. Like, they dug, they watched film, and Gus practiced every Polynesian name and had it
yep.
down. So And they've struggled this last game with a couple of names. Anyway, Matt, let's get on to what's not been the highlight so far, which is the offense. Okay, so I'm going to start off with a couple of tweet bags.
Tweet bag.
First, Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter, says to this, "I hate myself for saying this, but does this year feel like 2012 all over again? Amazing D wasted on an awful O." I'll get to that in a minute, Matt. Hashtag tweetbag. Then Todd, who is basically a multi-sport athlete here, he's doing it both on Facebook and Twitter.
Can't be stopped.
Says to Sweeney.
He's the Deion Sanders of the podcast.
That's right. He says to Sweeney, "Ugh, if you had told me 3 weeks ago that Detmer slash Hill would equal Doman," and he misspelled Doman, by the way. Sorry, Todd. "Nelson, would have called you crazy." Okay, I'm going to need to reel these two back in, okay, on a couple of points, all right?
But okay, but to be fair, wasn't Todd and D's tweet in response to Sweeney's tweet?
Yes.
They were connected, right?
They were connected. But let me reel this in on two ways. This defense isn't as good as 2012. Not yet. Okay? 2012 was an all-time great defense. 2016, maybe. And they've had a good three first games. They gave up a lot of rushing yards to Arizona. And, you know, they're a very good defense. Defense is not a problem, but let's not get carried away there. The second part is stop it with the Doman Nelson 2012. That offense, though statistically you might say, well, it was better. They didn't play anybody. They have played so far three above average teams. So, and in 2012, we may have played three above average teams the entire year. I'm looking at that schedule right now. It's not a good schedule. So yeah, let's reel it back a little bit on both of those things. Yeah, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a little early. I just feel like it's early to start attaching that type of a label to it. But I'm a little bit more optimistic about this defense than I think you are. I think this could go down by the end of the season. I think this defense could be one of the best we've ever seen. Offensively, I'm going to go back to what I said last week, which I think is still true. This is an unfinished product, and I think that we're going to see something different out of this team offensively within the next 2 or 3 weeks than what we've been seeing. And it's not going to be strictly a result of a drop off in opposing talent. I think that as the offense gets installed, things are going to change. And that situation, the Doman Nelson 2012 situation, was so weird. There is so much we know about that now that we didn't know then, that just altogether, it's an unfair comparison. I mean, yes. I'm the guy who said that Riley Nelson should go hide in the locker room, and I've come around on that one.
Yes, yes.
Understanding what he was doing, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I have some respect for Riley Nelson. And what
I
he
do
did.
Too. I did at the time. I thought you were a little over the top on this.
I was over the top on it.
Made for good podcasting, though.
But I think we know now that Nelson was doing what he needed to do for the good of the team. And at the time, you know, we didn't fully understand that.
So
Detmer is better prepared than Doman was for this job. Doman was put into the offensive coordinator position too early. For Detmer, it's either now or it's not going to happen, right? So it's just the situations are just very different.
Yeah, yeah. So by the way, the team that year in 2012 did play a little bit better schedule than my memory had me, including, you know, that awesome Notre Dame team. But they also played against, we'll have two teams on the schedule that are worse than, say, 90th in the country. That schedule had four of those games. Okay. So let's keep in mind they've played three above average teams to start off.
Right.
Unfortunately, though, it doesn't get any easier over the next 4 weeks. So, Matt, let's talk about that offense. Let's start with Taysom here. Todd asks, man, he is just all over the place on Facebook. Do we officially have a quarterback controversy or just a bunch of people talking about it on Twitter? I'll let Kalani Sitake answer that in his press conference. And he says we don't have a quarterback controversy. So
there you go.
Are we done? At least for
I
this
think
week?
So. Yeah, for now.
A friend of the podcast, Darnell Dixon, in the Daily Herald, Matt, says he basically asks, and I hear this, seems like some columnist or somebody brings it up almost every year, when there's any kind of QB controversy is, why do coaches treat QBs with kid gloves? Darnell makes the point that if an offensive lineman had played as poorly as Taysom has the last couple of games, you would just replace him with a different offensive lineman. If a wide receiver drops a bunch of passes, you just replace him with a different wide receiver. So, Matt, why is the quarterback position different? Why is it that coaches, even ones that you would think are the more progressive ones, like a Bill Belichick or a Nick Saban or Jim Harbaugh, why do even those coaches treat QBs with kid gloves?
I don't even know where to start with this. There's so many things to say, but it is. But essentially, what it boils down to is that an offense goes through the quarterback in a way that's different than a lot of other sports
and a lot of other positions,
and is definitely different than any other position on offense or defense. The ball touches. There's two people who touch the ball on every single play: the center and the quarterback, and in whatever, I don't care what offense you're running, your quarterback and the way that he plays, the way that he leads the team, the way that he's coming out and reading the defense and telling people what to do and taking those cues and sending out signals and all those types of things, okay, sets a tone, sets a style, sets a feel. And you have to be careful before you switch that out. It's not like swapping out an offensive lineman. It's not like swapping out a running back. I mean, you're changing the whole rhythm when you pull the quarterback out, because every play literally goes through his hands. And in this particular case with Taysom, we've got a brand new offense. We're three games into installing an offense of which the kind of which he has never run. And so you don't, after 3 weeks in, say, "Oh, well, this is not going to work," and yank him. Have I had moments in the past couple weeks where I've said out loud, "Yeah, you got to pull him out. This is absurd." Yeah, I have. But when you sit down and think about it, if you're going to try and install this offense, you have to leave him in. At some point you probably pull him, but this isn't it yet.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, and I did on our halftime show. Taysom is not an elite runner anymore, and if he's not an elite runner, I don't think he is. I don't think he's a better quarterback.
But he's completed 59% of his passes.
Yeah. All of those passes under 10 yards, except for like two of them. He is the offense as it is constructed now. They are throwing, okay, the average yards per attempt so far this year, yards per attempt by the BYU offense is 5.41. If that were to hold, and keep in mind, we're going to play a bunch of other good teams here in the next 4 weeks. That would be the lowest yards per attempt by a BYU offense since Matt Berry. Okay? This is not good. This is historically bad through three games. Now, granted, Utah's defense is great. I'm not sure UCLA's or Arizona's is, though. 5.4 yards per attempt is unacceptable. That has to change. And unfortunately, right now, he's not hitting anybody besides that touch and a pass to Kurtz towards the end of the game. He's not hitting anybody past 10 yards, period. Not anybody. And that's, I mean, if he's an elite runner, you can put up with that. But he's not an elite runner anymore. He got caught by defensive linemen twice against UCLA. Now, the linebackers catching him, I don't feel as bad about. Those guys are fast. He should never get caught by a defensive lineman who's not like, not named, some NFL All-Pro. But you disagree, clearly.
I think you got to give him more time.
Okay. All right. Well, okay.
Because I think some of the issues on the deeper balls, he doesn't own all of that.
Nope. That is fair.
And there have been some of those passes which I'd say are in the 15 to 25 yard range that are bouncing off of people's hands. Yep. When you take into account, how much space the guy had when the ball was coming his way for yards after the catch and those types of things. So some of those plays were available, and there's clearly times where receivers didn't run the route, at least what he was expecting. Now, who was right and who was wrong, I'm not sure it's really clear to us yet, right? At least on one occasion, you could see Detmer express some frustration with Taysom that he threw it to the wrong spot.
Yes, yes. And I think that comes with what you said to the point of this is a new offense. And unfortunately for Taysom, it's the third offense he's had to run while at BYU.
Well, the thing that people that I'm surprised you haven't said yet, but people who disagree with my point of view will bring up is he's a senior. So what if he's good at this 6 weeks from now? You know, who cares? You got to put Tanner in there and start installing the 2017 offense now.
I don't agree with that. I'm not into that.
Maybe you feel the same way. You'd win now.
No, you put in whoever you think's going to win the games now. We've got a tweet back question, which I'll just bring up now from Rain or Snow on Twitter. That's at @ROSBYU. Say Taysom manages to get BYU bowl eligible. Is it really worth holding back Tanner's progression? I don't know what that means, and this is how I'll put this. Lots of quarterbacks have sat for a year who are even better than Tanner is, and they turned out to be fine. If you're not mentally tough enough to be a backup, you're not mentally tough enough to be a starter.
Yeah, and I don't know that.
I don't believe in that stuff.
Yeah, and I don't know that Rain or Snow here is saying that we're going to damage Tanner's ego by sitting him down, right? I think it's back to this idea of giving him, you know, but if he gets another year under his belt, maybe he's going to be that much better later, right? Because you're going to burn a year of eligibility on this.
Yeah, well, they've said they're not going to redshirt him anyway. What I'm saying is he's getting practice reps. You don't just get better in games. He's going to learn this offense and come into next year knowing the offense, unlike either of them this fall, right?
I agree, but I think there is more value in. I'm not saying I totally agree with the standpoint here, but I disagree that there's not a significant amount of value in playing in the games.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that's not what we play the games for. Like, this isn't a developmental league. This is to win the games. If we're 1-5, if we lose the next three, I'll have a totally different opinion. Right?
Yeah, see, I'm with you in the sense that I'm not up for we're going to just bank this season up to experience, or we're going to play Tanner in order to make him better for 2017, right? You got to win now because, I mean, somebody gets hurt. There's so many things about the future in college football that you just can't count on that. You have to put the player in that you think puts you in a better position to win now.
And I'm saying no matter
who that is.
I don't think Taysom Hill is the guy today. I think if I were in charge, I would have Tanner walk out of the tunnel as the starter on Saturday. And again, I am not, and you know this, I am not a pull the quarterback guy. That is not, like, I am with you usually. I do not think it is, I think it's often more harmful than it is useful. I think it is often a knee-jerk reaction that can, you know, porous offensive line, for example. Our next tweet bag question is from Ryan Sorensen. So this is his second tweetback question. He hashtagged three tweetback questions and hashtag I am coming for you, Sweeney, which also is not trending. I checked that out on Twitter. So Sweeney, you have nothing to worry about. You don't have a whole group of people coming for you, just Ryan. But
apparently there's at least one.
But Ryan's got a third question here later. Does Tanner have the same struggles with the porous offensive line? Putting Tanner in it is not going to help Jamal not get hit in the backfield 10 out of his 12 carries.
Right, and it's not going to give – Tanner's not going to have any more time back there than Taysom does. I think that if you believe that there will be a big step change in performance of the offense by putting in Tanner, then I'm with you. But there are so many other things going on offensively, and I think this tweet here from Ryan points that out.
Yes.
There's so many other things going on offensively that you can't just peg this on Taysom Hill and pull him out and think it's going to get any better. I don't know that putting Tanner in gives you a real step change in the performance of the offense.
Right.
And that being the case, I think you keep those guys together and you got to let them struggle through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think I would make a different decision. I don't have a problem with them sticking with Taysom.
And the offense,
I know that may sound kind of like I'm wussing out, but I really don't. Yet the offense has, and we'll get into this in a second, a bunch of other problems.
Well, and, you know, the offensive line as a unit has struggled, right? So yes. I'm not ready to point at anybody individually.
Nope.
You know, I would argue that Lapuahu has looked pretty good when he's been available, right?
But he wasn't there, but, you know, he was injured and did not play against UCLA. That was a big deal.
But as a unit, they've struggled, you know, and we've had a lot of drop passes, which has been a little bit of a problem.
Yes, we have.
So I don't know that, I just don't see it getting a lot better just by switching out the quarterbacks, given everything that you're up against right now, trying to get this offense installed, trying to get some of these less experienced at this level offensive linemen into a groove, you know, working through some injuries. So I don't see it. But let's see how I feel, you know, by halftime of the West Virginia game. I might be, you know, saying the same silly stuff I said about Riley Nelson back in the day.
And yeah, you probably won't
go
hide
his shoulder pads or something. No, I've learned my lesson there. I don't think I'm going to go that extreme.
So 16 drop passes, Matt, in 3 games. That's not good. And that's not Taysom's fault. So, Matt, a bunch of questions ask the same thing. So I'm just going to kind of rapid fire through them and get to Ben Anderson. I think asked it the best way that it'll be fun for us to do. Kyle on Twitter, at Kyle W. Blue, is it the offensive line, the receivers, or Taysom? Ryan, for his third question, says, love the podcast. Who is causing the problems with the O? Taysom, the O-line, coaches, or all of the above? He says, D, all of the above. Pat H., at Crazy Coug Fanatic, of course, a super fan herself. Do you think the loss of senior receivers is contributing to pass game woes? And then Ben sent us a tweetback question via snail mail, or like I call it, email. Put the below offensive problems in order, okay? And what would you do to remedy the ones that are the biggest concern? So he lists off 6 problems, Matt, and you tell me what you think is the most problematic. QB play, receivers not getting separation, receivers dropping passes, offensive line, lack of depth at running back, and play calling, and he says, slash Ty Detmer. So, Matt, what is the biggest problem so far?
In my opinion, the biggest problem so far on offense is the offensive line play, because that's hurting you in both phases of your offense. It's hurting you on every down. It's hurting you in all sorts of situations. And if you can't get that straightened out at the line of scrimmage, then it doesn't matter who your quarterback is. It doesn't matter how deep you are at running back. It doesn't matter how experienced your receivers are if they can get separation, because you're never going to get a play to last long enough to do any of those things.
Yep.
And that, so in my opinion, that's easy for me to say the offensive line play is the number one concern.
And I would say after that, Matt, I'm just going to combine those two receiver things. I don't think quarterback is even the next problem. I think receiver play, and I'm going to throw the tight ends in with that, is the next biggest problem.
I agree.
16 dropped passes, 16 in 3 games is way too many dropped passes. Every announcer, including the terrible ones, that has covered BYU in play-by-play so far in these 3 nationally televised broadcasts has remarked about the inability of the BYU receivers to get separation. I don't ever remember us having this big of a problem getting at least one or two guys open. Like, we had these shifty guys. It's not speed, straight-out speed, right? Like, Ben Cahoon's the wide receiver coach. He wasn't the fastest dude on the field, right? Isn't it technique? Isn't it, you know, faking a guy out? I mean, I guess I'm a little befuddled on this one, Matt. I don't know what the solution is.
Well, you know, but this has been a problem for a few years. You know, this is one of the the digs on Coach Holiday when he was here was that he wasn't able to coach players into doing this well. You know, and then you look at some of the guys that are still around, you think, well, they ought to be able to create some separation. Either, you know, I understand these aren't all like the strongest guys in the world, but some of them are pretty quick. And there's also some of them are also pretty fast. And so you'd think they'd be able to figure something out or find the soft spot in the defense, and get on the same page with the quarterback and get to that spot and get the football. And you see some flashes of that, but we've not been able to do it consistently by any stretch.
So Matt, I would say right now, the 2 receivers that I'm most confident in going forward are Lalu Pututau and Kurtz. Now, I saw one question, I don't know where I put it, so I'm not sure who it's from, asking if Kurtz, I've never been impressed with him, the person said, and I don't know. Kurtz is the best thing we got going. Now that he gets eight catches after he's got his legs under him, remember, he basically didn't have a fall camp to get in shape and right. get ready because he was hurt.
Right.
Kurtz and Lalu Putu-Tau are the real deal. I don't know about Juergens and Treneman. Treneman has been unable to create a lot of separation. He's certainly fast, is what we've heard. And Juergens has dropped four passes in 17 targets.
Well, and Treneman was supposed to be good on those like bubble screen type plays, right? And we haven't been able to
done, like,
rip one of those off.
Yeah.
Well, and we, you know, so it's, you know, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's you get into a little bit of a chicken and egg here too, right? When you come back to the offensive line play, and we had a little conversation a minute ago about Taysom's inability to complete passes beyond 20 yards. So you have this combination of our receivers really getting separated, along with how does he have enough time to stand back there and wait for somebody to run that far?
Yeah.
You know, and so and then he doesn't want to. I think they've it appears that they've been pretty strong with him, telling him to be very careful about throwing on the run. Throwing across his body, throwing across the field. And so some of this stuff plays off, you know, some of these very basic problems play off of each other. But I think for me, when I look at this list, I see offensive line play, I see receiver play, and then I feel like there's a gap until we get to the next series of problems.
Yes. Yeah. For example, I'm not sure play calling is the issue. Everyone always thinks play calling is the issue, right? Everybody's an offensive coordinator. And quite frankly, the lack of depth at running back hasn't been a problem, I don't think.
I don't see the lack of depth a problem at all.
We did one other carry by a running back against UCLA. It didn't matter who we had running the ball.
Yeah, and I understand the concern, the big drop off after Jamal, maybe, right? But Jamal's pretty talented, and
it's not like two Jamals.
And it's not like he's having to come off the field a whole bunch, right? I mean, okay, well, maybe. I guess there was, you know, he did miss a drive. But I'm kind of intrigued by what Pat says now that I think about it, about the loss of senior receivers. And I think that is impactful, but mostly when you think about who, right? Mitch Matthews was a vocal leader for the receiving core and for the offense through what was last year a tough season. And I don't see anybody doing that. I mean, when things were going poorly against UCLA last week, you didn't see anybody trying to fire up the troops. You didn't see anybody kind of grabbing the reins and pulling everybody out onto the field. You didn't see anybody who wanted to, you know, kind of put that on their shoulder, at least in a demonstrative way. You know, we do know that at the end of the Utah game, Taysom Hill asked to have the football on the 2-point conversion. But that's the type of thing you're looking for, right? Is that type of leadership, people to step up in those types of situations. And at least in the receiving core this year, I don't think we have that.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is, I think, overplayed to me. I don't know. I don't know if that means anything, right? Matthews was emotional, and I loved Matthews. But, you know, we've had a lot of good wide receivers that weren't demonstrative. You know, in the end, these guys just need to catch the dang ball. Right? And get separation. No one is talking about seniors or whatever when you know, pick great BYU receiver X is the leader when he's a sophomore. You know what I mean? Like, the only reason we're talking about it is because they're struggling. And we have a senior wide receiver. His name's Nick Kurtz, right? Like,
right, but he's not doing the types of things in a leadership role that a Mitch Matthews did.
Yeah, but
maybe it's just different and it's not as visible. I don't know.
The offense wasn't exactly great last year either. I know people like to remember all the good things, but we put up a lot of big stats against terrible teams and struggled against the good teams. So to me, this wide receiver play is just a little worse than the last couple of years. We have not had great wide receiver play in years. We've had some good individual performance, but as a unit, they have been just okay. And I think that's a problem going forward. Now, Matt, we are 53 minutes in and have not even talked about West Virginia yet. So we are going to move on from the offense and preview here in the next few minutes, West Virginia. Are you ready?
Let's do it. West Virginia.
So West Virginia, they have played two games so far. I don't know if we know how good they are. They beat Missouri at home, 26-11, which sounds like a weird score. And then they beat Youngstown State 38-21, and that was a week and a half ago now. So they had
one of the teams that beat Virginia.
What's that?
It was Youngstown State. Is that one of the teams that beat Virginia? I can't remember.
I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
Too soon.
All right. I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
I know. I have a whole thing against talking about that.
Yeah, so let's move on. We got a whole preview here. So Matt, are they any good? I have no idea. Honestly, like, Football Outsiders has them as the 40th best team going into it. Right now, if you use the Macy ratings, the combined ratings of all the computers, they're 29th. I have no idea how good they are.
No, honestly. Nobody knows. I don't think they know.
So their offense looks really good. Their defense looks mediocre. It kind of looks like the same race, team as maybe UCLA. And that's a little scary in that I think they have a very good deep offense, and then they happen to match up with us with some physical cornerbacks and some fast running linebackers.
Yeah.
So that makes me nervous. I don't know how good they are. The other piece to this, Matt, is this is a really good offense so far against, granted, two lackluster teams in Missouri and Youngstown State. So Matt, let's just say Taysom. Let's do over under on Taysom, okay? Because we assume he's going to be the starter. Over under 265 yards passing.
Under.
Over under 50 yards rushing. Can't believe I'm setting it that low.
Under.
I'm going to say under on the passing and over on the rushing.
Interesting.
And by the way, I don't count sacks when I'm talking rushing, by the way. Can we just stop? Can they just change the statistic rules? It's so dumb.
Nope.
He had -7 yards rushing. No, he didn't. He did not have -7 yards rushing. His rushing attempts were positive. He got sacked 4 times. Anyway, the NFL does it right. Sorry, NCAA. Another thing you got wrong. Over under Jamal Williams, 85 yards rushing.
Over.
I will agree with you. Over. Over under 415 yards total offense for West Virginia.
415 yards for total offense.
Total offense.
Over.
I'm going to say over. Over under 415 total yards for BYU's offense.
Over.
Over? Seriously?
No, under. I'm just kidding.
Oh. I was like, wow. Boy, you...
I was just making sure you were paying attention. Yeah, come on, 450 yards?
415, I said. 415.
Oh, still, 415 yards?
Yeah.
Playoffs?
Playoffs?
I'm taking the under.
All right, so Matt...
Sorry, everybody.
Right now, West Virginia is favored by 7, is the current spread out of Vegas. Matt, are you taking West Virginia and that over-under? Over-under. On that spread? Or are you taking the Cougs?
See, it's tough for me, like, on paper... I think that West Virginia covers that, but are we capable of playing a game where that ends in a difference of larger than 7 points? I don't think we are.
I think that spread is too large. I think they're giving West Virginia kind of a home field advantage, and I don't think it will feel like a home field advantage because of how many BYU grads will either travel or live in D.C. I think it is. I would take BYU to take that spread. I would take them. And Matt, the over why can't I think of the word right now? The over under is set at 48.5.
Oh boy!
I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the under in a hurry.
Yeah. So, Matt, prediction.
Do these guys even look at the scores?
Vegas, you can make money betting on college sports. I would not suggest that. But there are inefficiencies in their systems. And this is one where I think they have not really been paying attention to how BYU or West Virginia has been playing.
Isn't there some stats geek back there doing that stuff on a spreadsheet or something? I mean,
I hope they're using
sometimes it blows. Sometimes it blows my mind when they come up with these numbers.
So Matt, oh, and over under 10.5 tackles for Butch.
Oh, solo tackles or assisted tackles included?
Assisted included.
Oh, over.
Taking the over every
game. Yeah, how many plays? How many plays do you think West Virginia will run?
90.
Okay, so a third of those, he's in on them.
Yep. You won't need a third. Your math isn't very good.
No, I'm just telling you what I think he's going to do.
Oh, you think he's going to be on a third of them? Yeah. Okay. I was like, dude, 10 tackles is not a third of 90. Gotcha. I'm with you, buddy.
Rounding.
You're predicting records. You're predicting he gets even more than 19, which he might
Is there a more football name than his? None. I mean, you go. It's reminiscent of names like Rocky Beagle.
Rocky Beagle. Yeah, I was thinking that.
You know what I mean? Like, this is great stuff. This is great stuff.
Yes, absolutely. So, Matt, your prediction for we will be there at FedEx Field on Saturday. Your prediction for BYU and West Virginia.
So. I've gone back and forth on this one as we have predicted the season, and I'm not super optimistic based on what we've seen over the past couple weeks. And I think this is a West Virginia team that can put up some points and can take advantage of holding onto the ball. And I see that the offense I think is going to continue to struggle a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and predict a West Virginia win, 24-17.
I am very close to you. I agree with everything you said. I think their offense will struggle at times against our defense. I think they will struggle sometimes to run the ball. But I think eventually, with all the plays that they run, with some of the athletes they have and position players, they will break a couple of big ones. I think BYU will once again just play well enough to stay in the game 21-17 for the Mountaineers. So, Matt. You were predicting you had been solid, and me both, on a victory against West Virginia. We're both predicting a loss. So, Matt, against Toledo, we're predicting the rest of the season as always. Win or a loss?
That's a win.
All right. By the way, Toledo currently, according to the computers, is 30th best in the country. We're 50th, so keep that in mind. Michigan State, Matt.
That's a loss.
That is a loss. We're going to get absolutely destroyed. I'm glad we decided to go to FedEx Field instead of East Lansing.
But you know what? To that point, it's still awesome to go. You know how excited I am just to go to a game?
Oh, yeah, I'm excited.
Just to see the Cougars in person. You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day who decided not to go. And, you know, I just want to go. I just want to go see him play. Yes. You know what I mean? I want to see Satake on the sidelines. I want to see Butch mess somebody up.
But
I just want to see him play.
I don't want to see him play Michigan State. Like West Virginia, we could easily win that game. I mean, we're both predicting it's within a score, right? So this could go either way. Michigan State, that line's going to open at what, 15?
Yeah.
16? Mississippi State? They're not very good. They're not very good. It's in Provo. It's a win.
Really?
Yeah, they're not any good. They're not any good. Overrated.
I'm waffling on that game.
You're waffling on that game. Well, you got to make a call. You can't waffle.
All right. It's a win for now.
You're not a Clinton. All right.
It's a win for now.
Boise State. You switched last week. In the preseason, you said this was a loss. Last week, you said it was a win. Matt, are you going to continue your waffling?
I am going to back that train up and call that a loss.
All right. Cincinnati, who, by the way, is not very good.
Yeah, I think we can win the Cincinnati.
So we win out, right? SUU, UMass, Utah State.
Yep.
We are both predicting the exact same record of 7-5 with the exact same wins and losses. I wouldn't be shocked if it's no joke. We lose to Toledo and beat Boise or something weird, right?
Yep.
But I think we get to 7 wins, and I think people are not going to be super happy.
No.
With 7 wins. And quite frankly, you and I talked about this in the preseason. 7 wins was in the respectable range. I know people will feel differently. I thought, you know, 9 was your best case scenario this year. I just didn't think we could win double digits without the bowl game. And I thought, you know, 6 is bad, But I thought 7 or 8, that's your range right there. That's your median, if you will. So, I mean, it's not ideal, and I hope I'm wrong with some of these games. Here's the thing. This offense may eventually click, and it may even start this week. Right? I mean,
and you know what? If it does, all bets are off at that point because this defense is that good. I think this defense can compete with almost everybody left on the schedule. It really comes down to whether or not you can get the offense into some type of a semi-polished state.
Yes. The defense should be able to keep us in, you know, in this for sure, in any game that we're in. I mean, Boise State seems to be a pretty good offense this year. Michigan State's offense is decent as well. So, I mean, we've got some good offenses left, but quite frankly, I don't know that we have an elite offense left on the schedule. So, I don't know that we're going to have to worry about an elite offense. We do play some pretty good defenses, though, between now and the end of the year.
Yep.
So, anywho, Matt, well, we're 105 minutes in. We are, of course, as I mentioned before, you should check out our pregame show, assuming we have good cell phone coverage at whatever BW3s or whatever we're in. Do people say it that nationally? Buffalo Wild
Wings? I don't know. I've just always called it B-dubs.
B-dubs. They would, wherever we're at to eat lunch, we will do a short pregame. We'll try to tweet that out and Facebook that out a few minutes before we start it. Either way, you can go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/riseandshout, before the game at any point. We'll do it probably a couple hours before kickoff. And who knows? You may see us at halftime if we can somehow get good coverage. Probably not. But anyway, we'll be back next week on a Tuesday, Matt, back on our regularly scheduled week. Thank you guys for downloading and listening. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. You can email the program at riseandshoutpod, one word, riseandshoutpod, spelled out, at gmail.com. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!